I think he's driving. Let's go to Ecclesiastes for a change. Chapter 3, I think. Good. Why?
We can't make a decision.
We have a minion.
Do we?
You have 10.
Yep. Yeah. 9.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh.
Elijah, though.
Elijah.
Oh. Oh.
I'm not doing very well, excuse me. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. The commentary on that is endless. But because it affects every purpose and everything, it says he made everything beautiful in his time. The whole idea of the time and the season has to do, and the purpose has to do with, it is necessary for you and I and all men to go through the process of believing that there is a purpose for whatever your mind conceives of. And then the time for that purpose is to see the emptiness and vanity of it. And so no matter what you can conceive of, its purpose is to see the vanity of it. So there's a time to every purpose, to everything under heaven. And that time all ends a judgment day. So now if we can have any kind of understanding of what judgment day is, judgment day really happened at the birth of Christ. But it certainly, from our perspective, happened after Pentecost. I mean, there was the time and the purpose and the... Remember, the word feast means set time. These are the feasts of the Lord. These are the set times of the Lord. Everything else is meaningless in the economy after this mystery of Judgment Day. Can you capture that?
Each feast kind of does the same thing. It's Judgment Day.
It was all Judgment Day. It was judged, was over.
He's reminding you
that. Yeah, right. And so the whole idea of the way we live and the way we encourage you to go push everything. If there's something you got to do, go do it. If you can't get rid of it, if you can't see it by experience or empathy, then you've got to go do it until you come to the place where you agree with the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity, because you only have the opportunity to find out the time and the purpose for everything under heaven during the 7 days of linear time. And it's only God's long suffering that has allowed it to continue. And once you know this, you're without excuse. Now, there's a jillion... I'm not going to go through all those. Now, this is no more true than for the Feast of Tabernacles. When you tie the lulav, you tie your boat. And that means that once you have truly tied the lulav, the thing that they marched around and beat against the altar after you've thrown the ethrog or the pomegranate, then you no longer go out on the sea of humanity if you have any smarts. Capisce? Do not journey on the sea with humanity between the feast of the festival of Sukkoth and Hanukkah. Now, remember, Sukkoth or Tabernacles is the end. It's the reason time and space were existent. So for us, if we understood that feast, then we have to understand that our only purpose now is to lay down our life. There is no other self-seeking. There is no self-seeking. It can't happen. A time to be born, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time of love and a time of hate, a time of war and a time of peace. We could go on forever. I don't want to do all that. But once you've picked up the cross, then the time for everything else is over because it's your death. Humanity is no more to be tested. There's a new creation, his own right arm, there's a new race. If you're still playing in the sea of humanity after you've picked up the cross, that means you didn't pick up the cross, you didn't die. Still somehow trying to use this mystery of godliness for self-realization, no matter what you call it. And again, remember, you can't look anywhere to see. The only model we have is the scriptures. And the point of the whole idea of you have to know somewhere deep within the essence of your being that you, just like Noah, he faithfully built the ark, even though it had never rained before. He didn't know what rain was. But for 117 years, he built the ark. And by his obedience, he condemned the world. Now, does that mean then whether we're disobedient because we want the world? No. It means that your faith affects all of time and space. And until you understand that, you will run around thinking you're this. Every time something doesn't go your way, you're this little insignificant piece of dust in the cosmic dung heap of humanity. God is longing for your faith to echo throughout all of time and space. Not your faith to get stuff, but your faith that no matter what anything looks like, you know it's perfect, you know it's finished, you know Christ is all and in all, you know that every knee is bowing, you know that every tongue is confessing. And therein you rest, therein you abide. Because for you, the time for every purpose and everything under heaven is past. You see the implications of this? It's kind of staggering to quote somebody from the past. What does God require of man? To believe on Him who He has sent. If you believe on Him, you can't believe on anything else. Every day, every morning, I say the same thing. Is it getting old?
It's like, no.
I hope it's not going to take 117 years. It's not funny.
The only day that counts is the day it started raining.
Can you maybe understand why I'm so hard on you? Can you maybe get a hint of why I it just drives me crazy when all this little mind talk and little plans and little agendas, anything but love occurs? I offended someone last night. She had to make a special trip to tell me how much I offended her.
Did you do this while we were all there?
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any idea?
I did.
Anyway.
Oh.
Anyhow. Do you understand if I can still offend you, then there is still you left? Do you understand why this is the worst job there is in the face of the earth? Because my job is to offend you so that you won't be offended by the cross. I don't enjoy making people mad at me. No matter how much you believe that. But if you excuse the preaching, you excuse the cross, and God help anybody that does that. What profit hath he that worketh, and that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it, humbled in it, come to the end of yourself in it. Isn't the labor and the travail getting old? Why do you keep working it? The scriptures are clear. To him that worketh is a reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. So you live your life constantly in debt to your own imagination. Now how stupid is that? I have seen the travail that God hath given to the sons of men to be emptied in it. So the Antichrist, in all his subtlety of mind and thought and purpose and timing, has gone forever. What's going on, Gary?
Yeah. I'm hearing in the sense of, if you try and hear this without picking up the cross, don't hear it, because you cannot comprehend what's being said. But if you pick up the cross, it's a whole other universe.
Yeah, it's not even part of the human race. I mean, it has nothing to do with the human race. I challenge you to look in the scriptures where it says the good news of God, or the good news of Christ, the gospel of Christ, or the gospel of God, or the gospel of the kingdom. It never says it's the gospel of man. It never says it's God's good news to man. But how has this mystery been hijacked to be another instrument of self-realization or political action or social action or some other idiocy? Or, worse yet, an instrument of self-realization for each individual? Can you see the mystery has been hijacked?
Even when we talk about the feast, the feast of the Lord, which when I heard that a minute ago, that's when he eats. That's when he consumes. Not when we consume, but we are consumed at that time. I think that's the right way to see it, because otherwise we think we're just there to have a good time and enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, I mean,
we're there as his sustenance.
We see the idea that didn't celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. He just ate something. He didn't get baptized. He just got wet. It doesn't have anything to do with us. Nothing. Except, behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when we see him, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. You can't. We're built so that what you hear is what you see. And so, you can't see anything unless you first heard. I mean, that's why it just blows me away that somebody could come here and spend years and years and years and then just sell it out for a minute for a wife or a husband or a... He hath made everything beautiful in his time, and also he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from beginning to the end. This is why reading the Talmud is just terrible, because you read and read, and there's just this idiocy after idiocy after idiocy. Rabbi so-and-so says there were 1,084 worlds created before this one. That's what it means. He made everything beautiful in this time. Rabbi so-and-so says, I don't know what that means. Rabbi Gamaliel says, this one's a good one. He said, Solomon was the wisest man in all the world, and yet we'll see in a little while in here in Ecclesiastes that there's one thing he didn't understand, and that was the ashes of the red heifer. It was impossible to understand it because he didn't have the body. But anyway. These are some of my favorite. These are good ones, in my opinion. If one had never eaten a piece of bread that declares that everything is beautiful, it is null and void. But with Solomon, he had provisions for one day, was 30 measures of fine flour, etc., etc., etc. It was appropriate for him to declare. In a like manner, if one had declared vanity of vanities, all is vanity, and had never owned two farthings, his statement is null and void. But with Solomon, and the king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones or as dirt, it was appropriate for him to declare that. So, you see, and this is where, from all of this, this is where I knew this idea about you must experience or be able to empathize someone else's experience to find out that vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Otherwise, we would have to live 1,000 years. If we had no capacity for empathy, then our age would have had to have been as in the days of the early days. They lived. Adam lived 920 years.
Yeah, our combined experience somehow, by the grace of God, is equal to Solomon's experience if we
can see it.
Right,
but that's why your questions are probably more important than answers. That's why whatever you have to say must be said, because it's until you, I mean, you can't think it. If you just think it and keep it, then you're just like a, you know, you're just another sour grape, or not even a sour grape. You're a grape that is retaining its skin, so you're a leprous grape, never becoming part of the wine. This is why it gets so frustrating to talk and say these incredible things and have no response, until somebody comes and responds to me afterwards. You know, well, that's nice of you, you dumb fuck.
That
right. Good.
Yeah, then you become like the slag of the wine that they scrape off.
Well, you don't even get there. You're still a grape that hasn't even lost its skin. You got mist in the stomping.
Mist.
You didn't get stomped. If another had declared, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, if he had never ruled over 2 flies, his statement was null and void. I love that. If another of the heathen wise men had uttered the verse, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods," I might have understood that this man does not understand the nature of idolatry. But Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, spoke it before, and before he saw, he did not omit a single form of idolatry in all the world without turning to it and serving it. Do you know who Jethro was? Jethro was the Canaanite whose relative became Caleb, the friend of the bridegroom. That's the best that the human race can be, is the friend of the bridegroom. And so Jethro, Caleb's father was Jethro. Jethro was the Canaanite. And he, it said of him, there wasn't a single, the smallest, teeniest idol or the hugest idol that he encountered in his entire life in which he did not instantly turn to it and serve it. Does it sound familiar to any of you? And so that's why it says, if another of the heathen wise men uttered this verse, "And now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods," I might have said that this man does not understand the real nature of idolatry. But Jethro, who spoke that in Exodus 18, did not omit a single form of idolatry in the world without running to it and serving it. Now, you don't omit idolatry by looking down at somebody. You can only omit or destroy idolatry when either you've experienced it or you've empathized it. It's just, you're right. Remember the Abodah Zarah, the strange worship? It can't be marred by the person. That's why in the book of Revelation, when it talks, when the destruction of Babylon with all her infinite number of idols is discussed, it's the merchants who became rich because of her delicacies, they're the ones that destroyed her. So it gets a little funny, but you understand what I'm saying, I hope. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. He has set the world in their hearts so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. Now, the world there is the word that they normally translate for, you know, eternity or something, but it's the word olam. He has set ha-olam in their heart. He set it in their heart so that it cannot be understood. It cannot be comprehended, because you can never know the work that God doeth from the beginning to the end. And that's why the best that man will ever do, no matter what discipline of science, no matter what discipline of thought, he can take it as far as it'll go, and there's only chaos. Now, this is the first generation that has found that out, which is kind of interesting. Before, there was always hope in science. But no matter what it is, what area of science, what area of philosophy or economics, the smartest men of this generation have taken it to the end and found only chaos. That's a big deal. It's like the day, the end of the day of the Lord cannot come until a man of sin, the son of perdition, has been revealed. It doesn't say he has to be revealed to the whole earth. He just has to be revealed in the earth. Well, he has been revealed. And it's you. Me, the son of perdition, the one who only knows the way of the snake, the one who thinks and muses and measures until he gets the right time.
That's the first time I've seen that setting eternity in their hearts, and we've talked about it hundreds of times, and it never really clicked until now how compelled to seek out him or truth or whatever it is, but you can never get there.
Right, that's why all men are truth seekers.
Yeah.
And then they sell out. You sell out for family, you sell out for opinion, you sell out for a million things. But all men sell out. And they stop seeking after truth. Because the only thing that can satisfy is that truth is that which doesn't vary with time. That's the only meaning that truth can have. So I'm talking to these guys the other day, I'm saying this kind of stuff, and they say, well, you speak with such authority. How do you know that? I just want to reach over and smack them. That's not true for me.
Any of them say that's bullshit?
Only Rutledge.
The Antichrist has many truths. That's why
they
can say that.
And that term is an oxymoron. It can't be. There can't be many truths. Other than by an ultra-moron. not you, but... I wasn't picking on you that time.
No, but we are.
Do you see? I mean, you've got to come to some place in your mind that this is the finality. Instead of just wandering around. I'm a victim of the universe. Poor me. And God has set you at the top of the pyramid, as high as you can go. Well, that doesn't look very damn high to me. And I don't care if you don't believe it, but have the courage to at least say what you don't believe. I don't care if you don't understand it, but don't just sit there and take it without... I used to spend months and months and months if I didn't understand something that was in the scriptures. It looked like a contradiction. You can't... You got to come up with that kind of zeal somewhere. You can't be satisfied with anything until the Word is made flesh in you. So the truth isn't—it's not knowing something; it's being something. And it probably will have—it'll probably embarrass the crap out of you, whatever it is that you're going to be. We will continue on Ecclesiastes. Anybody have any response?
That eternity in your heart is like when the Spirit was poured out on all flesh. It's there, but nobody can get to it because it's not of your mind.
It won't share it with flesh. Yeah. You have to die.
And what's so cool is if you get there, it's
chaos.
It's chaos, and you can't do anything with it. Then you have to die.
All righty, take it, big guy.